Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. Well, a couple of months ago, I met Blake from Jetty Row Brewing at Melbourne's Gabs Festival. I'm not sure if it was my poor hearing, the loud music, or the variety of beers that I'd consumed during the night, but I think I initially was referring to him as Jake. But we got over my initial mistake, and we've been in contact ever since. Oh, and Blake has generously sent me down a few beers lately, one which I'll crack tonight. It's been really nice. I bloody love this industry. Anyway, back to the intro. Jetty Row Brewery was born out of a lifelong friendship between a couple of mates who wanted to follow their dream. Sounds like a great place to start a conversation about the 10 or so years that have gone by since that idea was first dreamt up. So let's get into this. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Jetty Row Brewing co-founder and head brewer, Blake Bowden.
G'day, mate. How you going?
And going great.
It's Blake, great. But you can call me Jake. You can call me whatever you want, really.
That was so embarrassing that night, but we'll put that in the past. It's okay.
I don't think I was in my finest form either.
Nah. Oh, cracking my beer now. You've broken all the Beer Healer rules tonight, and you've already cracked your beer. And even though we are both drinking the same beer here tonight, it's the Jetty Row Brewing Infinite 8 Double IPA. We'll have a chat about that a little bit later on, but for now, cheers and welcome cheers, aboard.
Mate. Cheers, thank you.
Ah, bloody delicious. My bad, we should have done this long, long ago. We've got, I don't know, 5 or 6 years of stories to catch up on. So my question for you is, mate, where the bloody hell do we start? I'd love to go back to the start of things if we could, if you're all right with that.
100%, mate. Don't mind in telling the story. It's quite a long journey, I guess, when you look back at Grant and myself, my best mate. We're born a week apart. Our parents met in prenatal class. We met when we were 2 weeks old. Our parents actually literally crossed paths as Grant's mum was coming out with him and my mum was going in to have me. And we've sort of been best mates ever since, which is probably as tragic as it is cute because no one else will put up with us.
Yep.
But from that point on, we got to sort of the age of, 14, which is probably a little bit early to decide that we wanted to own a pub together one day. And then I started cabinet making when I turned 16, and my boss at the time, Simon Weir, who you referenced in the pre-chat, he was a home brewer and, well, still is a home brewer and obviously a founding member of Jetty Road as well, but he was home brewing. I was 16. I couldn't buy alcohol, so why not make it?
He was leading you astray from the age of 16.
My parents were pretty happy about it, but we also, not long after I kind of got the bug home brewing with him, we built the bar at Mornington Peninsula Brewery. The original sort of site in Watt Road. And I got to know, well, both Simon and I got to know Matt Beebe and AG. AG was obviously head brewer at the time and sort of returned back to that exact facility now. And sort of AG was good enough to take me under his wing and obviously Matt as well with us on sort of the business side. And I kind of sort of started doing a little bit of a almost like an apprenticeship kind of thing.
I was going to say, it sounded like an apprentice really, yeah.
Well, I was just helping out AG because he was so under the pump. Mornington was exploding and I just was just keen to do anything. So I'd go in there and help grain out, sweep floors, just I guess probably just be a general pain in his ass, and he was good enough to kind of keep me around and, show me the tricks of the trade. And from there I ended up buggering off and moving to London. Stayed over there for a couple of years. Grant, my best mate, came over and we went to Oktoberfest together in Munich, and over far too many steins of Augustiner, we decided that we were going to do a brewery. Came back and
Hold on, let's just reenact that conversation. I can imagine it's like scuttle beer, I put it down, man, I love you. And you're like, man, I love you too. Mate, we should start a fucking brewery together. What do you reckon? Oh, that's the best idea ever. Is that how it went?
It's not far off, but if you spend much time with me and Grant, we usually bicker at each other more than tell each other we love each other. So, but most of it you got verbatim. So, yeah, we got back and I kind of mentioned it to Simon because we got back in contact. I was sort of working back with him, just trying to get some splash back together and figuring out how we were going to do it as 25, 26-year-olds. And
yep.
Simon was obviously keen to get involved with that as a, you know, a home brewer and kind of the person that set me on a path of, you know, loving the entire industry and brewing. It was, made sense for all us to kind of go into that together. And then, you know, we spent probably the best part of 2 years trying to find the right place and the right facility in which to set up. And luckily enough, time when we kind of found the right place, we also found another three blokes, all locals that we were kind of all kind of knew through each other. And so it was sort of six mates that were 6 degrees of separation, so to speak, all yep. came together and decided it was a great idea. We had Nick O'Brien, who has had, you know, almost his entire life in pubs and venue management and all that sort of stuff. Jonathan Pritchard, who was in sales and had his own cosmetics business. Shane Bland, who spent a lot of his life in corporate and insurance and all that sort of stuff. Simon, obviously, with some construction background, along with obviously myself, and then me as a professional alcoholic, and Grant, my best mate's he's a management accountant. So he doesn't
exciting management accounting.
He doesn't have the personality, but the other five of us made up for that. So it's all good.
You can say that about him. Yeah. So what, you're all local boys to the Dromana area. Is that, I pronounce that right, Dromana?
Yeah, so we're in Dromana. We're all Mornington Peninsula boys.
Yeah.
And Nick was originally sort of New South Wales, Sydney area, but it's been on the peninsula for years now. So we've all kind of known of each other and, you know,
yep.
by one way or another, quite closely connected.
Was there ever any consideration that you would be doing the brewery anywhere other than down the peninsula?
No, we always wanted to be on the peninsula, and Dromana was yep. kind of the place that we really wanted to land. Like, so the name Jetty Road was actually the residential house where Simon was living, and obviously being him home brewing there, we just kind of nicknamed ourselves the Jetty Road Brewers. And then when we were home brewing, we had a couple of mates, like we'd end up having, you know, hundreds of people coming through for a beer and a Friday knockoff and all that sort of stuff. And someone's like, you guys should, you know, start charging for this. And, you know, it's kind of exploded from there. And we thought we'd keep the name Jetty Road Brewery. And we've only really moved about 3.5 Ks down the road into Dromana Industrial Estate.
Sorry to interrupt. Just a couple of things you can do if you want to help spread this craft beer gospel. First up, Apple Podcasts. If you've got it on your phone, find the Beer Healer interviews. Scroll all the way down to the bottom, rate, review, subscribe. That's the best thing you can do to help me out. Other than that, whatever podcast player you listen to this on, follow me or subscribe to me on that one. And then also find me on Instagram and follow me there. Thanks for your help. And early on, there was no brewery, was there? This was all a home brew slash gypsy contract brew, whatever you want to call it, thing to get started, wasn't it?
Yeah, correct. So luckily enough for us, obviously I didn't ruin Mornington Peninsula Brewery's facility or their beers too badly when I was helping out, because AJ and Matt were good enough to kind of sort of throw us the keys to the kingdom, put a tank aside for us and let us sort of crack away at that. They'd had their production brewery set up by then and had a little bit of capacity at that Watt Road facility for us. I think they more or less pushed some stuff around in order to kind of get us in there out of being the blokes that they are. So
good blokes.
We started off, obviously, as soon as we signed the lease on that, on what is Jetty Road Brewery, we started sort of gypsy brewing out of there. They've got a 10-hex system, so we're sort of only getting around about 20 kegs every sort of 14 days or so, which was plenty in the beginning, but it only took about 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and we were starting to you kind of run out, so we had to explore other options, which meant that we, pardon me, that beer's got a bit of froth on it. We Went to Kaiju, started doing some contract brewing with Kaiju. The boys there, Nat and obviously Grum and Cal were great to us, made some really great beer. That's where kind of we started more contract brewing. The Gypsy Brewing, I was actually going in obviously on a weekend and brewing myself on their kit, whereas the boys at Kaiju might have even polished the beer up probably a little bit better than I was in those days anyway. And everything kind of kept going from there. We launched into cans, and then about a month later, which was probably about 11 months down the track of sort of releasing our first beer, we kind of got the doors open at Jetty Road, which was just the sort of tap room restaurant part in the beginning. And that's when we started the construction in the brewery. And
It
went from Kaiju to Hawkers into Brick Lane in that whole contract.
Oh, you did go to Brick Lane. For some reason, I thought you were at Brick Lane, because I've sort of chatted to those guys a lot, and they mentioned some of the names that they work with, which obviously I won't mention here, but I thought you were in there as well, but also hanging out with Marzen. I love Marzen. He's a great bloke. He's crazy, but he's awesome for the industry.
Yeah, well, I actually went toe-to-toe with him about 5 minutes before I met you at Gabs, where the prof got me up on stage and told me that we'd going to have a chat and then bring Marzen up, and I had to have a debate against him. Like,
the two big brains on the stage.
I was about to say, if anyone knows Marzen in this industry, it was like throwing him into the lions.
Yeah, he's one of the only blokes when I get onto these things, I don't necessarily need to have a plan of attack or any questions or anything. It's just like you wind him up and you just let him go. I was talking to him one or two nights ago, and I said, mate, we've got to do another session. And he's like, just tell me where and when, and I'll just bring my best stuff. He's good fun to talk to.
He's brilliant. We ended up having a chat at our stand that night as well with my girlfriend and him got along famously. So they just basically spent the whole time ripping the piss out of me, which is fantastic.
I can imagine that. Okay, so the contract brewing was a pretty serious sort of effort then for a little while.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we really I guess hit the ground running, especially with our pale ale, which was fantastic. We were getting our brewery in, we got a pretty reasonable ranging through a lot of the national accounts, which was kind of unexpected. And that's kind of, I guess, part of where Mighty Craft or previously Founders First sort of come in at that point as well.
Was that early on that they started to take an interest in you?
Yeah. So Mighty Craft started as Founders First. And it was actually a couple of local boys on the peninsula that put Founders First together, and it was based off an interest in us. So we were their first investment, and the company actually formed around the idea of kind of helping us and then helping, you know, subsequent breweries. And then it's like just like our business has, theirs is kind of just developed and evolved and exploded into obviously spirits and acquisitions of.
So literally to start with, it was a couple of blokes with some money they wanted to invest and saw you as a need to maybe you could take some of that, and that was how, like, it was as simple as that, was it?
A couple of the boys were considering investing personally, and then kind of saw the opportunity to set up what was Founders First and then become Mighty Craft as their own kind of thing that was a business that they could create that would then invest in it, if it makes sense, rather than personally investing in us and kind of so they kind of had obviously dual revenue streams with a plan, because they saw the potential in an industry where, you know, a lot of microbreweries and craft breweries are opening all the time, and some of the biggest barriers to entry are capital, and there's room to grow, yet not always the cash flow to grow at the speed that you potentially can. That was kind of one of the things with us. We started on a fairly shoestring budget. We were able to get the venue open, but we were trying to scrap together cash to put the brewery in when they kind of came and approached us and said, we can help top that up, which meant the brewery went in faster and we were able to kind of probably ensure that our brewery was set up for rapid growth rather than try and plug stuff in later down the track and replace things and all that sort of stuff. So infrastructure in to make sure that our footprint was going to be able to be maxed out, essentially.
Yep. And so when did you actually commission that brewery in Dramana?
Now, I'm terrible with dates, but if we can rework backwards, we are open We opened in December, on December 21, and it will be 4 years this December.
Okay.
So it would probably be about
2017.
Yeah. So it would probably be 2018, around this time, that we were getting pretty close to commissioning.
And you just said you've been open December 21 this year. You said you've been open 4 years.
But the brewery came about 12 months after, or 9 months after.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, right, okay. So, yeah, other way around. Yeah. Okay, you'd been opened. Yep. Brewery later. Yeah, right.
Yeah, the venue. And DJ from Mountain Culture was our commissioning brewer, which was brilliant. He was working.
He was doing that job.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we've spoken about that with him before. Oh, well, that's pretty handy bloke to have on commissioning brewery, I reckon.
It was great to have him on the tools and show me a bit of his magic, but it nearly killed me each night when we knocked off. And
my next question was going to be, is he as loose in person when he's, you know, out of the limelight and just having a beer? Is he as loose as he seems?
I don't think he'd mind me saying that he's probably looser. Mind you, since then, obviously,
he's got a baby and a family and stuff. He's very sensible now.
And an absolutely exploding brewery that probably keeps him pretty busy as well.
But when I was trying to get him on the podcast, it was so hard because so much stuff going on. And he literally was at the new brewery on the day that we were doing that, in between like electricians and plumbers or something turning up and a slab being poured and crazy stuff.
I don't envy that at all. Our brewery install, like, he's obviously on his second already, but I reckon it's wiped years off my life, to be honest.
Yeah, you look a lot older than I thought you were. Since I'm joking.
My liver is, at least.
All right, so you've got this thing going on. So this is the start of the relationship with Mighty Craft, which, so we had five co-founders, if you like. Did you have a bit of mums and dads sort of in, and friends and family sort of getting in on the action as well, or is just the five of you going in terms of like how the brewery was split up, you know, cash wise or capital wise, whatever?
Yeah, for sure. So the original six of us, then there was
six, sorry.
Yep. So yeah, five plus me.
Plus you. Yeah.
Then there was another six, like preference shareholders. So slightly different share scheme, but another six of those guys tipped in just before Mighty Craft did, and then Mighty Craft came in and kind of got us the rest of the way.
Yeah, this is really interesting, I find. Like, I'm in awe of what Mighty Craft have been doing, and shout out to those guys. I think they're just going great. The business is just building and building despite the crazy frigging times that we live in. But this is really interesting for me to see, you know, the six plus however many else of you that started this thing, and all of a sudden, very early on, before you maybe have started to really realize what might make you some money further on down the track, here comes this other crew that want to sort of jump in a couple of years into your journey, and almost some could say they want to try and, you know, get onto a good thing that you've already started. Are they trying to, you know, sort of study their own? And I think it's a really interesting discussion that you guys are big enough to say, oh, okay, let's look at the business and say, well, this is what we need to be successful in the future. We're sort of all maxed out with what we've done. It's okay to bring someone else in to help us, because I think there would have been a few challenging discussions, would you say, around that?
Oh, yeah, it was definitely a lot going on at that time, and, you know, a lot of stress and sleepless nights trying to get a brewery open. And essentially we just knew that it would fast track us, and, you know, it has. We probably wouldn't be where we are today without, obviously, the help of the Mighty Craft lads. And it was kind of a nice sort of, I guess, tip of the hat or a bit of a confidence boost for us to, I guess, see those guys have the confidence in our brand and where we're already at, to set up a complete business based around the confidence they had in that and what they thought they could then build from there onwards.
And obviously they bloody love you, because slowly but surely they've bought into the business a little bit more and a little bit more, to the point where now they're majority shareholders, am I right?
Yeah, they're majority stakeholders now. They have kept sort of investing in us. Obviously over the last few years we've just been plugging in more tanks and candy mines and all that sort of stuff. So they've been great for us, meaning that we can kind of really keep pushing through. And obviously there's the COVID aspect of everything as well. We've been selling, obviously, plenty of beer in pack and all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
But, you know, having a venue closed Not only does that hurt, I guess, the balance sheet or the profit and loss, but it hurts me as a brewer because every Friday it was one of the most enjoyable things to see the joint pack
chatting to people,
a knock-off beer, and I guess at the end of the day, what we do it for is trying to make other people happy, enjoy our beer. It's nice to see it first.
And for those that don't know, I think you've got a 25-hec brewery. I don't know what all your other stuff is in and around that, but if you were to compare yourself in terms of size to some other maybe well-known breweries around Australia, just so people – I like to give people a bit of an idea of, if they don't know you specifically, they say, oh, yeah, you're kind of like Mountain Culture or whatever. Who would you be sort of equivalent to in setup, do you think?
Good question. We would be probably – very similar to what Pirate Life would have been in roughly year one and a half or year two. So they ended up obviously doing about 3.5 million litres out of their site in High Marsh.
Yep.
And then they put 200 hex in for a little bit, and then that's when they moved down to the port. But in terms of tanks and stuff, we've got 25 hec Premier Stainless that's almost carbon copy of what they had.
Yep.
And then we sort of started with 350 hec tanks, which I think is relatively similar to them. And then we've banged in 600 hec tanks since then.
Oh, fuck. Oh, so you're actually a little bit bigger than I thought then. I didn't know you had that much storage.
That's a little bit of extra capacity that we don't necessarily need right now. We're sort of kind of – we've probably got a cellar capacity of about 1.2, looking to brew more towards the 800,000. But wanted to maximize obviously I had to rip the roof off basically to get the last few tanks in. So I didn't want to do that three times. So I thought, may as well just get them all and chuck them in place and give us some flexibility over summer.
And that 25 hex system, how hard are you working it?
It's been like summers are insane. Obviously the last sort of 12 months have been interesting with COVID, and you kind of pull up and then all of a sudden the market goes bonkers because everyone's actually sitting at home drinking beer. So
teas at home,
So we've sort of not had a proper run at it. So we've either almost kind of been feast or famine. But we're lucky enough that we're getting such great efficiency out of our brew house that we can fill our 100-hec tanks in three brews. So we can do it in a day. So we don't have to, I guess, push quite as hard as what we would if we weren't getting the same efficiency out of the brew house.
Yep. Oh, that's pretty cool. And in terms of the kit you've got, have you got the ability to sort of, and I forget if, I don't know the terminology, but I know I've seen it at Marsden's Brewery and I've seen it at Deep South, Dave McGill down here recently, where you can start a brew, get it to a certain point, move it along, and you're almost like you're piggybacking as it goes around. Have you got that sort of con? Yeah, chase it.
We've got a three-vessel brew house, so we've got a mash lauder, kettle, and then separate whirlpool. So essentially we're mashing in at, 6 in the morning, 9 o'clock, and then midday.
Yep.
And it's sort of like, six and a half hours as a brew length, and then you kind of wipe 3 hours off because you're chasing it. So, if we're mashing in at 6 o'clock in the morning, the last brewer's walking out at, well, the second brewer's walking out at about 6:30 at night after doing a full clean.
Okay, that's not too bad there, is it?
Yeah, that's 100 hec, so we're pretty happy with it. It's pretty efficient. So,
obviously those tanks cost money. We talked about Mighty Craft getting involved. So tell us about how it all sort of works now. Like how involved are Mighty Craft these days? The original six. How's it all set up now?
So essentially at the moment, and the way that it runs, Mighty Craft obviously set up their own sales force, the Mighty Craft Collective. So they basically own 100% of our sales. So what they'll do is they almost order off me and purchase it immediately.
Yep, nice.
And then they've got a partnership with BevChain. They do all the supply chain management, all that sort of stuff. So we just hold on to the stock that we're going to sell through our venue /venues with Lawn sort of opening again in October.
Yep.
Or aiming for October anyway, I should say.
Yeah.
As for the original shareholders, Nick and JP were the only two that were ever really operational.
Oh, okay.
So Nick's moved on and JP's just recently moved on. Obviously, when Mighty Craft sort of took over 100% of sales, JP kind of technically became a Mighty Craft employee, which was, you know, a different kind of situation for him.
Yep.
But he did a great job, and obviously he's been the, you know, our first sales rep, so to speak, in the in our motherland, and has absolutely killed it for us. I think
we're still doing
about 65-70% of our volume just through all the doors that JP opened.
Yep. Yeah, nice. And so best mate Grant, what's he doing? Is he just kicking around the edges, or has he ever actually been in and done some bloody hard work with you? Because I've seen him in photos. He looks good in his photos with you.
Yeah, that's his job role. I think it's just Captain Photo Man. No, I end up on the social media more than anything, which is
he's like a sprig of parsley. Just sprinkle him into your photos every now and then, just to garnish it.
Yeah. So Grant started off obviously as our managing director.
Yeah.
And then obviously with Mighty Craft taking over majority stake, he's taken a step back to basically being just a board member and operations manager of Jetty Road.
Okay.
So he facilitates basically the day-to-day operations of the joint, which I'm not going to give him too much of a nod because I don't know if you've ever seen him try and get his head in his car door, but it's an effort. It's swelling rapidly.
And your old boss, Simon, he's now doing some stuff in the whiskey area, because I know he's hit me up. We're going to try and do a bit of an interview where he's going to try and convert me over from beer to whiskey.
I like it. No, it's interesting. Pretty exciting for those boys. He's obviously going into partnership again, so to speak, with Shane, one of the other original shareholders, original six, and another guy whose name escapes me, and I apologize to him because I have met him. But no, it's exciting little not little venture for him. That's pretty sizable by the sounds of things. So Simon's actually still literally 800 meters from our brewery cabinet making where I used to work with him. So
yeah, cool.
It's quite a little community down here in the Dramana Industrial Estate. So
he told me he's coming to Tasmania to do some whiskey research, and I think he's interested in music a lot and used to play in bands. So I'm looking forward to that chat. But
Yeah, he's a man about town. He gets around, so he's down in Tassie quite often. And I think, you know, I muck around played guitars with him a fair bit as well.
Cool.
He got me into that as well.
Nice. Oh, that's good stuff. Well, look, obviously there's been a lot of history that's gone in these last 6 years or so. Let's talk about the beers, because I'm enjoying this double IPA tonight, which was a ripper. We'll talk about that in a sec. But look, initially your beers were pretty core range focused, you know, very consistent in my opinion, but not necessarily playing in that more, you know, experimental style so much.
Yep.
I'm just wondering, like I spoke to Tim Purchase from St Andrews Beach, it's close to you. And I asked him the question around this was, were you trying to play it fairly safe in terms of, because you know that you're in kind of like a tourist-focused area for probably 6 months of the year. Were you mindful that you need to create beers that could, you know, obviously go into tins and go into bottle shops, but also handle those tourists that were going to be coming to your venue that may not necessarily be that far along in terms of their craft beer journey?
I think that's probably a positive to the whole situation, but it wasn't necessarily the thought pattern for us.
Okay.
We always wanted to make Jetty Road, I guess, as accessible as we could from the beginning. And I think the fact that like the core range, we always wanted to keep really accessible. So even the IPA, it's 5.8%, similar to Crankshaft.
Yep.
Not hugely hopped. The plan behind our core range was kind of have a fairly linear kind of drinking experience. So you start off with obviously our lager, which is supposed to be obviously, you know, that transitional beer. It's not an enormous step up to our pale ale, which is fairly lean in malt. It's quite, you know, lightly hopped for especially some of the stuff that's coming out currently. Similarly, our IPA is not a huge malt-driven beer, nor is it like a palate-stripping kind of bitterness.
Yep.
and our XBA kind of sits somewhere in between that. The whole point of that was just to try and, you know, I guess convert people across to the lager and then have beers that are within 2 e of each other, so that it's once they trust your brand, they kind of step up.
Yeah, I think it's smart.
Then you try the next lot, and obviously, you know, without being crude, you sell bulk piss if you're trying to make a more sort of, you know, national focused brand. And then obviously the idea was always to move into the more challenging rotational, seasonal, limited release beers, obviously keep the tap room interesting and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
We've probably played around or sat in the approachable area for a little bit longer than we'd like to, a lot due to the fact
that I was thinking that two things. So on the approachable styles, did you have a brewery that you were modelling yourselves on? Because in my head I'm thinking, you know, maybe something like A Little Creatures has done that very well a long time ago with not having anything that's too over the top. Was there a brewery that you saw doing that kind of thing and you thought, that's kind of what I want to emulate?
Look, to be honest with you, I don't think we exactly executed what we wanted to emulate, and it was almost the brainchild that Grant and I had was almost what Stomping Ground has executed well, you know, they're almost an anomaly. It was just something that we really wanted to be able to achieve, which was a brilliant tap room and a really wide range of beers. And then, you know, being that we were 26 years old, it took us a lot longer to execute. And then as soon as Stomping Ground opened, we walked into the joint, drank the beers and just went,
you beat us to it.
Yeah, exactly. But look, at the end of the day, I think we're, we're creating accessible core range beers, and then, you know, starting to dive into what we kind of wanted to be doing probably, you know, at least kind of 2 years ago. But
That's interesting. That was going to be part two of that question because, you know, from the outside looking in, and tell me if I'm wrong, it felt like with COVID and lockdown during 2020 that it felt like there was a bit of a line in the sand drawn for you guys, where maybe you said, okay, let's kick this up a gear. Somewhere around that time, it feels like that things started to change a little bit, and you had this very well-established core range, which I think might have even gone through a slight refresh of the branding as well from black to white cans, if I'm right, am I?
No, we were always white. No. The only one that's in black is the
Limiteds.
Yeah, double IPA.
That's right. I'll edit that shit out. No, I'm joking. But was there a time sort of around, I don't know, early 2020 or something like that, where the next phase sort of began for you?
Yeah, it kind of came in line with actually sort of getting our facility to the point where we could really own it. We obviously bounced in and out of contract brewing, and obviously, as we mentioned, we're at Brick Lane and all that sort of stuff. So it was actually we ordered our canning line and then COVID hit. So our canning line rocked up and we finally actually had complete control over everything that we were doing. So it just meant that we could, you know, we weren't locked into contracts. We weren't, we had the tank space and we had the ability to just do what we wanted when we wanted, and it was quite liberating, to be really honest. It was nice.
Yeah, cool.
Enjoyed the contract brewing with all the guys that we have. It's been a massive learning experience for me, but to really just be able to focus on what we want to do, what we want to do it, and do that daily, it's been brilliant.
Yeah, nice. And look, and since then you've released some great beers, the Jimmy Road Imperial Amber, the Attention to Detail Oat Cream IPA I bloody loved, and the one we're drinking tonight, the Infinite 8 Double IPA. Do you feel like you're really starting to hit your straps as a brewer now? Now you've been given that chance to go and try this shit?
I still refer to myself as a cabinet maker that's fooled enough people, I think. But
I love that.
I had a little bit of sort of tutelage as well from Justin Fox.
Foxy! Him and I spent 2 days together on Forex Island way back in the day when we were both at Lion. That was a good couple of days.
I'm assuming that your hair was a little bit darker back then, because Foxy would have actually nearly killed you if he's anything like what he's trying to do to me. I've had a couple of sessions with Foxy and he
does like a drink.
He does.
My hair's been great. Mate, I'm 45. My hair's been grey for 20 years, I reckon. Not quite this grey.
he was really great for me, and obviously more recently just being able to actually kind of let loose a bit, it's nice to see, you know, what I thought I was capable of, people actually enjoying it. So it's good to be able to kind of challenge ourselves in a different way and have people kind of respond, which is nice.
Yeah, that big. Oh, one I forgot to mention was Talus to the Max.
Yes, that was a great beer. That was actually kind of a funny story. We're at the Indie Awards and just sort of speaking with James Monching and Scotty, and we decided like we'd make a beer when we were kind of semi-tipsy, and then they both came down with Steph on the day, and we brewed the beer semi-tipsy. And that night ended up finishing at about 3 o'clock in the morning or something stupid like that. And then the beer just turned out brilliantly, which was nice because it was written pretty tipsy as well. And then, yeah, we entered it into the International Beer Awards and luckily enough got a nod for a gold medal, which was brilliant.
Look at you go. Look at you go. That's an awesome story. I love that. Writing recipes when you're half drunk, it pays off. It's unreal.
A little bit of extra inspiration.
The beers have been really awesome, really awesome. I want to take you back to late 2020, probably just before COVID. It might have been hitting China or whatever, but before it hit us. And there was a decision that was made to pull out of the South Melbourne venture, which I'm assuming was a little bit disappointing at the time. In my head, I was thinking, oh, great, what an awesome place to have a venue, because that's – when I come from Tassie, you know, I spend a lot of time in and around that kind of area. But while I was disappointed, I feel like that maybe in hindsight it could have almost been the best decision that you guys could have made. You might have really dodged a bullet in terms of creating a big frigging venue down there that, you know, for the last 12 months or so was not going to be filled. And might have actually crippled the company. But then you still went ahead with the plans for Lawn not long after. What made that decision to still go to Lawn less risky for you guys?
But look, yeah, as it was enormously disappointing sort of not being able to take advantage of the South Melbourne opportunity that we had. But I guess the difference between Lawn and South Melbourne was we were looking at probably about a $3 to $3.5 million build in South Melbourne.
Oh, wow.
With a full brew, like, you know, pilot brew kit.
It's going to be a full brew pub.
Yeah, correct. Oh, so, right. Again, sort of like the poor man's version of Stomping Ground, I guess, which was we didn't even know they were doing Morris Moore, but it would have been as I said, probably poor man's version of that. But obviously that couldn't go ahead, but an opportunity popped up down in Lawn, and rather than a $3 to $3.5 million build with a 8 to 10 month project, we had the opportunity to do a pop-up that was probably around about 150 to 200 grand and a 6-week project that kind of got us open for that summer. So
literally there was an established venue in Lawn and you could wheel in cool room bars, whatever, and take advantage of it in that way, as opposed to having a complete brew.
It was, it was a little bit more like a lick of paint, make it feel like Jetty Road, and be able to kind of service and integrate to a new community that we hadn't previously really touched that much. And it was, we were really well received down there, and you know, the community down Lawn is brilliant, and we're really looking. We sort of closed down to give it a bit more of a lick of paint, and obviously it gets a bit quiet down in Lawn and lockdowns and all that sort of stuff. We thought better off just to kind of really set ourselves for summer again this year and make a real go of it. But we're really looking forward to getting back down there properly and seeing everyone for summer.
Yeah, nice. So you've pretty much hit the two major tourist destinations for Melburnians, Peninsula and down the Great Ocean Road. But I was wondering, like, it's a fucking long way from the brewery, or – like, I don't know, I'm from Tasmania. Are you going to chuck kegs on a bloody ferry and get them across the water there? Because you sort of literally, you're on one side of the bay and that's all the way around through Melbourne, back down to the other side of the bay through Geelong and everything, isn't it?
Well, funny enough, we have chucked kegs on the ferry and taken it over. But typically speaking, the good thing about obviously the Mightycraft network and their partnership with BevChain is we can kind of send our stuff up to their DC and they'll sort of get it around, so we can kind of hold the stock for Lawn up there, and they get, you know, daily to every second day deliveries and keeps them going. And then, you know, we get down there as much as we can. Grant, sort of more so than me, I'm usually, especially over summer, kind of.
Oh, well, he's got to go down and take photos, doesn't he?
He's got to go down there and hide away from hard work and drink beers by the beach, I think. And I've got my leg rope that's about 3.5 kilometres because that's how far I live from the brewery. So.
It's a nice part of the world down there. One day I would like to do that full drive through because, it's absolutely sensational.
You'll have to let us know when you come through because our industrial estate is probably worth a good day of your time. We've got Two Bays gluten-free brewery about 800 metres away. We've got Bass and Flinders gin, Mr. Little Cider, Jimmy Rum, and then there's Little Rebel Coffee Roastery all in the same spot, so you can have a coffee to sober up.
And then there's actually about half a dozen breweries in and around the peninsula itself. I reckon you guys need to take a leaf out of the guys, Molly Rose and all that crew over at Collingwood and create like a peninsula brewery tour, or whatever you might call it.
We've kind of done a few collabs together.
We
sort of formed a bit of a group. It's sort of obviously fallen a little bit by the wayside during the last 12 to 18 months with all this COVID stuff. But, the Red Hill guys are probably about 5Ks up the hill. St. Andrews, we're great mates with. We actually opened on the same day.
Yeah, you did your third birthday collaboration together, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Mornington, which now kind of Matt Beebe's taking back that little Watt Road facility as Tar Barrel, as his sort of own project again. And then the Hop Nation boys are in the old Mornington production facility. And then there's the Dayton and Mr. Banks just up the road in Frankston and Seaford. So
spoiled for choice.
Oh, mate, it's a brilliant little spot.
You need to start selling that.
Get a good
you need
beer.
To start selling that. Jump on a plane, get in a car, head, what is it, how far's the drive? Like an hour and a half from Melbourne?
I guess you can do it from even the airport to ours in an hour and a half. So we're only 6 minutes from. And
you got to sell that.
You can get from the airport to our brewery without even going through a traffic light.
Oh, can you really?
Yeah.
Nice. That's awesome.
Which is good because that saved me and Grant a couple of times trying to get to the airport because we've left work late trying to get on a plane and get out for a work trip.
Well, if we ever start traveling again, I am coming to the peninsula because I've also said to Tim Purchaser, I want to get and see his, and I've got a mate who's got a beautiful beach house down that way, but I'm not sure whether he'd let me stay at it because I think it's up at the higher end of the Airbnbs in the area. So
yeah,
I might be struggling, but that's okay. Hey, speaking of many beer brands, it's my poor segue there. So Mighty Craft now has got about six or so craft beer brands it's got various investments in. And I was just wondering, is there ever like a Mighty Brands family call, Zoom call, where all the brewers get on and chat about what's been going on? And do you share information across from each brewery?
Look, to be honest with you, we haven't had many opportunities to do that. Like in the beginning when everyone was sort of getting onboarded, so to speak, we were able to kind of have a bit of a session together, which was really good fun. But everything's kind of just been so fast-paced with not only Mighty Craft but kind of each of us that we haven't really had many opportunities, which is kind of disappointing. But I guess the positive to it is at some point we will be able to. And obviously
that'd be cool.
The Mismatch crew sort of coming on board, I'm looking forward to meeting them. But, we're a little bit pinched at the moment in terms of
It's a bit hard,
being able to get out and about. But I've been lucky enough to do a collab with Sean Sherlock from Foghorn. Went up there and he actually nearly successfully killed me. He is an absolute machine. But it was a brewing experience. It was like, I was really lucky to get the opportunity to go up there and, I guess, learn off one of the absolute masters and godfathers in the industry.
And get away with your life.
Exactly.
On the last announcement when Mighty Craft sort of jumped in a bit further with you guys, they mentioned something along the lines of that they believe Jetty Road can become this national brand. I think you mentioned it a bit earlier too. Despite the fact that you are very heavily Victorian based at this stage, what are the plans look like for that kind of just expansion? Because I feel like there's a big jump to becoming from where you are when you're talking about 800 to 1 million litres to becoming a national brand. That's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, Grant and I, and I guess the original six of us, our plan was only ever to really make Jetty Road as big as what it could be organically, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Whatever that size is, we are selling some beer interstate here and there. To be a national brand, I don't think I'm necessarily referring to that Bolter Pirate Life kind of thing, but just I guess a brand that's recognisable, most of the way around the country and somewhat accessible at very least through online portal, all that sort of stuff. But we just kind of, I think the plan was just to be, with the core range, all that sort of stuff, as accessible to everyone as we possibly can be, and whoever really wants to come along for the journey with us sort of jumps on board. So I guess the having our own space, 100% kind of control of all the beer that we're making, and have some capacity now. We're at the point where we can kind of, I guess, be as accessible to as many people that kind of want to come on that Jetty Road journey with us as possible.
Yeah. So how far and wide are your beers currently going?
Good question. The difficulty for me, obviously, with my craft owning a lot of our sales, is I don't often always know exactly where and how we're sold. Yeah. But we're got some, like, we're dotted up, obviously, the East Coast and a reasonable sort of representation in South Australia as well. I'm not 100% sure of how much, but I know that Dare Murphy's and Coles have reasonable rangings across.
Yeah, okay.
We are obviously predominantly Victorian. We always want to make sure that we sort of grow from the home state out and, not neglect the people that got us to the point where we're sort of.
Yeah, nice. Could you be a big national brand with a 25-hex system, or do you need to maybe either start a second production brewery or go back to your contract brewing for your biggest lead brand perhaps? Or
yeah, look, that's a good question. I think there's, like as I said, Pirate Life had a 25-hex system. They were making 3.5 million litres.
That must have been flogging that system, fuck.
Yeah, they were 24 hours a day, 5 days a week at the point where I was there, and then they were adding to that. So the kit is pretty robust and it can make a hell of a lot of beer. It's not exactly the most cost-effective way of doing it when you're looking at the Brick Lanes and Gage Roads and the new, obviously, Bolter and Pirate Lifes of the world. That, but the kit that we have definitely enables us to kind of have flexibility in what we want to brew, so we can do the things like that Jimmy Road, chuck a barrel and a fermenter, but also make relatively commercial amounts of beer fairly efficiently as it is. So it's a nice sort of in-between sort of thing. And if everything goes in a good direction, you look at, I guess, reinvesting and making it more cost-effective in whatever way that possible that is. But luckily enough for me, I don't have to make too many of those decisions anymore, and I can just kind of focus on
concentrating the brewing.
Yep.
Let's make a bet here and now. Then, what do you reckon? 3 years, and you'll be setting up your next brewery.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a hell of a lot more grey hair in this camera shot. I'll tell you that much, because the first one nearly cooked me. I'm hoping that now that I've got a little bit more established as a brewer, I might actually not have as many sleepless nights and have an understanding of what I'm doing. Rather, like Foxy obviously was very helpful through that period, but and I had a reasonable understanding of construction, being that I was a cabinet maker back here, and then when I was in London, I was a foreman for a high-end building company, so kind of knew how to do a project. I just didn't know brewing as well as I probably do now.
That's right. It's all about, one of my old mates used to say, every day's a school day. And he used to say, life's a journey. It's a race, it's a marathon, not a sprint, all that sort of shit. Geez, he came out with some crap, that old mate of mine.
I live by the motto of bite off more than you can chew and chew like fuck.
Hey, that's pretty good. I like that one. I'm going to use
that. And then the second part of that is keep chewing.
Yes. Yeah, I like it. Mate, this has been awesome sharing all this stuff with us. You've been really open and honest, because, obviously there's been some, it's been a wild ride, absolutely. What do you think you've learned out of all of this so far?
Oh, good question. An enormous amount. I got a great confidence in, obviously, my brewing ability, for one. I've learned setting up a brewery and selling beer is not as simple as what everyone think it might be. And there's not as much money as it is what everyone thinks there is, but it is by far and away the best industry in the world to be in, especially the Australian brewing industry. Everyone is so tight knit, and it really goes all the way up to the top. I was lucky enough to be a associate Australian international beer judge this year, and to see all of the kind of top of the industry in Australia. All come back together as like a bunch of mates kind of finally getting let back out to see each other during obviously a COVID period. They were also happy to be able to be back judging. And you can just see how much this industry really is about making great beer and helping each other to do so. And I guess, as I said, I'm a 32-year-old that was a cabinet maker. I wouldn't be.
And now you're a fucking millionaire pumping out a million litres. Look at you, you rich man.
Yeah. Well, you can see my house at the moment. So, I couldn't have got to where I am today. And I guess Jetty Road wouldn't be either without the kind of industry that we do working in Australia with all the amazing breweries out there that are willing to give you time and energy and IP and everything just
it's pretty
in
awesome.
Order to make everyone kind of, I guess the old saying is rising tide floats all boats, but
yeah.
The like brewing industry really does go above and beyond for each other, which is amazing.
Yep, no, they are awesome. Absolutely. All right, last question. Let's do the time travel thing and go back to 16, 17, 18-year-old you and Grant. Or after, actually probably after you've had that drunken Oktoberfest and you're pulling together that business plan for Jetty Road, what advice would you be giving to those two probably fairly naive lads?
Well, good question. Invest in a good pillow because you're going to need to get the most out of every time you put your head on it.
That's good advice. Good advice. Sleep is. I've been telling my son lately when we've been arguing about putting the fucking iPhone away when he goes to bed. He's 17. Sleep is so important. So important.
Oh, absolutely. And when when you're not getting a heap of it, everything else in your life slows down. So you really need to focus pretty hard.
Oh, mate, and you and your girlfriend haven't even had kids yet. Wait till that fucking hits you.
I'm holding that off for as long as I can, Chris. I don't know if you could hear in the background before, but I've got 90 kilos worth of, I guess, kids, you could call them, which is two dogs, and that's plenty for me at the moment. Between a brewery, two dogs, and, Grant's called my work wife, so he keeps me on my toes as well. So it's nice. Enough to handle.
Nice. Mate, there's a reason why, young parents or new parents, when they've been given the choice of having a shag or having a sleep, they choose sleep. It's so important and it just kills you when you don't get it. Well, I reckon that is great advice. Mate, my apologies for not doing this earlier. So glad we bumped into each other at Gabs. It was great to meet you, Jake. And thanks for joining me on this tonight. I've really enjoyed our chat, mate. Best of luck for the future. I'll be watching on with a keen eye because I feel like you guys are about to take a really big step forward in the next 12 months or so. So great stuff, mate. Cheers.
Thanks, mate. Loved it. And let me know when you're over this way. We'd love to catch up for a beer in person again.
It's probably going to be 2025.
Yeah, we can swim. One of us can swim the other way.
don't you bloody try to come to Tasmania. We've got a moat. Stay out.
Yeah, like I keep you a nice pristine little corner of the world. You guys are doing really well down there, so congratulations.
Safest place in the world right now, I reckon.
Oh, and the most beautiful.
Not the most exciting, but it is beautiful.
You guys are doing pretty well down there, I reckon, mate.
It is. Thanks, mate. Cheers to great beers.
Thanks, pal.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.